Let's go spirit hunting. I'm Susie Carrick, Chief Taster and Tale Spinner from NZ Spirit Guide, and you're listening to Tales from the Top Shelf, where we meet the makers, explore the distilleries, and uncover the people, passions, and the stories behind New Zealand's world-class spirits. Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show where we uncork the stories behind New Zealand's incredible distilleries, the people who bring them to life, and of course, the spirits worth making room for on your top shelf. I'm Susie Carrick from the NZ Spirit Guide, and this week we're heading to Pukekohe, just south of Auckland, to meet a couple who are proving that sometimes the old ways really are the best ways. Matt and Alicia from Harrier Springs Distillery aren't just making great spirits, they're doing something that's believed to be unique in the commercial distilling world. Their still sits outdoors and is fueled entirely by wood fire, producing spirits much the same way whiskey was traditionally made generations ago. Whilst there are wood fire stills elsewhere around the globe, having one operating commercially in an open air is something truly special and something no one else is doing. So let's head out to the farm, pull up a seat by the fire, and hear the story behind Harrier Springs Distillery. Welcome, Matt and Alicia, to Tales from the Top Shelf.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Right. Now, before we even get into this distillery, let's talk about the farm. How long have you been there and what are your two backgrounds?
Well, we've been here about 5.5 years in Pukekohe East. And before I go into the bit about the farm, our backgrounds are quite different, actually. So I've got a background in HR. So I'm still working full time as an HR manager. And Matt works as a full-time carpenter.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then, Matt, did you mention before you've also come from military background?
Oh, yeah, back when I was younger. But I went overseas and I was on a petrol explosion and I couldn't really go back to that. So that's when I got into the carpentry. Not a military explosion. That was a whole other thing. That was another experiment. But
okay. And then tell us about the farm.
Yeah, so the farm, I think both of us stayed in the city. I mean, Matt's from the country, he's originally from Rotorua. I'm originally from South Africa and from Johannesburg, so definitely a city girl. Never in my wildest dreams imagined myself on a farm working, you know, barefooted in the dirt. But as the years progressed, Matt's desire was always to get back to the open spaces. And then one year I said, okay, I'll compromise. Let's go to Waiuku. That sort of seems far enough. And we got an acre. I thought that'll make him happy for his desire for the wide open spaces. And so we went to Waiuku. We got a few chickens, a few sheep. And that's sort of where it started. That was during the first lockdown. And then quickly we realized that we needed a little bit more land. And so looked around and we were only about 18 months in Waiuku and then moved to Pukekohe East. We got more land to be able to grow our own beef and plant our veggies. And so that's sort of where I think the dream started. It was first the farm. And during the first lockdown, when everyone was working, well, most people anyway, in essential services, Matt was home and being the creative that he is, always tinkering and making projects. We had carried the sheet of copper from house to house over almost a decade, and he finally found a use for it. And during that very first lockdown in Waiuku, he was tinkering along in the middle of the lounge, and I'd come home to an absolute mess, and he made a 20-litre still. And that's sort of where the dream originally started.
Oh, it's that one over there. So that was just a little mock-up sort of...
Right. Okay. So looks similar to one that you would buy off the shelf, but no, quite different. So then producing spirits, was that sort of part of the dream? And was it sort of going to be a grain to glass operation, or is the vision sort of developed over time?
Yeah, it developed. It started off just first I had to learn the basics. You know, just start off with UJS, ESM, sort of moonshine type stuff, just basic ferments, distilling, just learning the how to make the carts and all that sort of stuff. And I'd be sitting there with Alicia, because she didn't really drink at that stage. So I'm like, yeah, help me try this, and figuring out where's the cart, try this, try that. And she, because she didn't really drink, she didn't realize, oh, these are strong spirits. And she's like, oh, you're so mean, like pour some more. Like, what? Why are you so miserable with these little? I'm like, we've got a lot to sample. And so the first time, it got a bit messy. She ended up
got a very messy, actually.
Crawling up the stairs. So she learned the first time. Just little sips. But yeah, so we had to learn all of that, learn all the cuts. And then, you know, as I progressed, I had to then learn how to mash the grain and turn the starches to sugars and all this sort of thing. And combined with our home, the homestead growing all the food and the organic Ilan crops, straight away we're like, oh, wow, we need to grow our own corn and incorporate that as well. It just goes hand in hand with what we were already doing. Mm. And it just sort of went from there. Yeah.
Right. And okay, so you didn't just go and buy a still off the shelf. Like most distilleries, they would go to Portugal or China. You designed, you built your little 20-litre one first, and then you designed and built an outdoor wood fire setup yourself. That must have been a massive undertaking. Where did you start? How much did you build yourself? And were there moments that you sort of wondered what the hell you'd taken on?
Yeah, it was a little bit overwhelming, but I was just like, look, let's just do it. And so I had Yuan, my son, there to help. You know, the old thing about there's nothing you can say to hurt me because I used to hold the flashlight for my dad. Yeah, Yuan used to try and hold the copper still for me while I made the still. It was just like, craziness working away on it. And Alicia came home on the first day, and like, you know, what was that movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the husband's manically making like a mud mountain in the lounge? It's right. Like that. But there's a big 450-liter still in the middle of our lounge. Yeah. And it stayed there for a year. Manically sort of working on it, and playing around and changing it. God sent me here because no other woman would put up with it.
I was sick of it. But as I saw it developing, I really realized this was sort of something special. But I mean, lots of frustration. I will admit, in the middle of the lounge, and that still was built in the second lockdown when we moved to Bukit Kau East. And so I think that's when Matt again had the opportunity, the time. And I think that's key. I think if we didn't have that lockdown, you wouldn't have had the luxury of time to actually build that.
Yeah. But the other thing too, if we were going to build start another distillery like everyone else does, you've got to have financial backing, and there's a whole lot to it, which we didn't have. And so that was kind of like our weakness. So I was like, well, let's turn our weakness into our strength, and let's just go the whole hog and do it back how they used to do it. I can do that. I can build from scratch. Yeah. So that was the way we went, and like, we're just going to stick to that as our ethos. So everything moving forward, we're not going to do anything unless it's something that they did back in the day or they could have done with what they had available, you know. So it's become our whole thing.
That's really cool. Okay, so now you've built the still, you had to learn to master it. Now most modern distilleries just rely on electricity or gas. And they're far easier to control and much less labor intensive. What are the advantages of using traditional wood fire still? And how much work goes into producing each batch compared to a commercial distillery?
A massive amount of work. But I guess the advantages, if I start with that, I think the best way to explain it is like an analogy, right? So I went to Japan and I went through one of their pottery places where they've got this like furnace that, you know, it's 1,000 years old, and they hand make this pottery. You got all these beautiful things there, and you can get sets of pottery and it all looks the same. And so when you get home and you look at it, that each one's different. Each cup's different. Mm. There's slight differences as you sit there and drink your wine and pontificate about whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's what you start to really like. And then although they look the same, I'll have one glass that I like, you know what I mean? Even though I couldn't tell you why. So in a world where people are trying to get more and more precise and consistent and, you know what I mean, like that, I really want to just embrace the slight changes that we have. So each year would be like a vintage, and we'll say, okay, so this one this year, the grain was growing like this, it was like that. There's a slight, it's the same, but there'll be a slight change, and we'll highlight and draw attention to that change rather than try to mask it and move away from
it. Away.
Yeah. I think
it's artisanal. It's not supposed to all be the same, you know? So that's what I sort of see as being the, you know, the main pro of the whole thing.
Yeah. I think there's, like, as Matt was saying, there's a beauty, right, in honouring all those old traditions that we seem to becoming a lost art. And, I mean, as you mentioned before, I was never really a drinker, actually, until I met him. And even then, years into it, I didn't drink. And so for me, just I had to quickly get up to speed with, you know, understanding the whole.
I'd come to her and be like, oh, try this. What can you taste it? I'm trying a new yeast. I'm doing this differently. And she's just like,
That's
nice. No, don't tell me it's nice.
Yeah.
What do you taste?
So I had to get quickly up to speed. But I think in terms of like, as I was saying, for us then it was also wanting to do everything like the traditional way. With I developed a passion, as I said, being a city girl, not really interested in gardening, etc. But I sort of also during lockdown discovered that I actually loved it and I love going out there and planting. And so we decided, why not look at just planting some heirloom corn, you know? And so manually Matt and I went and, you know, plowed a little bit of dirt and planted seed by seed to sort of propagate that. And I think that sort of started the whole journey of wanting to remain true to those traditional ways of doing things. But to your point, Suze, it is very labor intensive. It's a lot of work. We're not going to say
it's from 6 to 10. It's just madness.
I was going to say, talk us through the whole process.
So we've got to get up straight away.
6 a.m.
Unless you'll still be in bed, I've got to get up and start moving the big fermenters. I've got them on dollies, so I'll wheel them over closer to the still, and so then I'm bucketing and jumping up onto the retaining wall, going over, bucketing it in. It's messy and sloppy, and you know, we've got to do all of that. And then of course we've got to, from there, once it's full, then we light the fire, and then it's a race. You've got to make the flour paste, you've got to get everything sealed, got to get everything in place before anything starts coming out. We've got to adjust the water. And
yeah, Matt's yelling, I'm running.
Yeah, I'm like, honey, I need more flour paste. Where's the rags? You know, this is just craziness.
His timing is really critical. But by then I am up by 7.
Yeah, she's always like, you've got to have a list of things. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I just work. I am chaos.
Pretty manic. I think 6 and 10 a.m., it's pretty manageable. And it's just the two of us, and we're running around getting everything sorted. Like you said, lighting the fire, getting flour paste, you know, getting everything set up. But after about 10.
Yeah, once it's all sealed and we're good, then we can sort of breathe and relax. And then it's time to have a coffee. And
I love that part. Like, that's when everything sort of slows down and you're just sitting at the still, be it for the next 48 hours, right? Because we're up from 6 a.m., I think, till about 2 a.m. in the morning. And then we'll call it quits, shut the fire down, and then start again at about maybe
6 in the morning.
In the morning till about midnight or 2 a.m., depending where we feel. So it's a 48-hour stint. And
Sitting outside.
Yeah.
Which is really nice in the summer. And horrible in the winter.
Yeah. So this was my next question. You're producing spirits in the open air. Now, to both of our knowledge, as I've said, you are the only distillery in the world producing spirits in the open air and solely fueled by wood. Does working outdoors present its challenges that people may not think about? And has the weather or seasons ever forced you to change your plans?
Oh, yeah.
The last one we did was in a thunderstorm. So I just had a feeling. I was like, I just think maybe we could invest in one of those pop-up tents, you know, the gazebos that you see. I was like, let's just get one of those. You know, I know it's supposed to be okay, but we've been lucky so far.
And
but
I'm like, no, we don't need it.
Well, let's just get one. We'll pop it up. And luckily we did, because when I went off to go collect the spring water, it was just a massive downpour, thunderstorm sort of thing. We actually got on video. So Alicia's sitting in like water, just flooding the whole place.
Yeah.
It was insane.
And you know, like when, as you said, so, you know, like, you know, it's people think, oh, it's, you know, distilling by the light of the moon, you know,
which
is really lovely. And I've enjoyed all of that. But that was my first. And of course, it seemed like an okay day, bit of a cast. And all of a sudden,
from nowhere,
this electric storm, thunder and lightning. I'm sitting next to a copper stump.
There are branches coming down on the driveway around her.
And Matt said,
she's good though. She held her post.
Matt said to me, do not leave the post because.
Yeah, do not leave the copper conductor. And the big metal structure over you.
But I think the interesting thing, I think I probably would have been more freaked out, but this is the advantage of growing up in Johannesburg, lots of really big electric storms, you know. So I wasn't that freaked out. But I afterwards Matt came back and said, Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, no, the only thing is sitting in this much water it was all flooded.
Notice it gets deeper each time.
So there are challenges for sure. There are challenges, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Now you have touched on this. Now that you've spent hours around this still, what is your favorite part of the day? Is it the lighting of it? And obviously not the madness of the running around, perhaps. making the cuts, seeing the spirits flow, or it is another moment that reminds you that this is all worth it?
Me? Oh, or you? Okay. Well, I guess, yeah, once the spirit starts flowing out, that's when you can just sort of calmly sit down and breathe and just sort of, it's just very tranquil, just manage the fire because, you know, you've got to really get that temperature right, spend a lot of time on that. And I just get a real kick out of just seeing it, just the zen of it, and just knowing that I've taken rock and copper and grain and I've made this industrial strength stuff, you know. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like anything that you make from scratch, you know, so I just get a real kick out of that. And it just, you almost sort of feel like you're living in a living museum, you know.
So yeah, for Matt being the creative, I think seeing his, you know, all his hard work and his dream come to life is the excitement. And but for me, I have a very frantic mind, and it does me well with my job, being able to multitask and have a million tabs open in my brain. But once we're sitting at that still and the franticness is done and dusted, and we're just going to sit there for the next 12 hours, for me, it's that slowing down. I don't have to rush anyway. I have to stay there and keep an eye on everything. Yeah. You're just able to just slow it down. And for me, I think that's the beauty. Sitting at night with the stars on beautiful nights is again something special, like just sitting watching something about being, you know, in front of a fire, right, watching those flames. And yeah, there's just I can't actually put into words, but it's really something special.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about, oh, isn't it lovely to sit out on a starry night, but most people, they might sit out there for a while, but to be forced to sit there all night,
yeah,
it's really helpful. It's really good for you. Just sit there and look at the satellites. And I've started to wonder what those are. But I'm like, you know, just watch the sky. It's so interesting. You're listening to the birds, or we've even seen a bat. Just weird stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice. Just sit there and just, I mean, that's how humans are supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds incredible. Okay, now let's talk about your delicious range of spirits. Now, one thing that really stood out to me is your liqueurs that you produce. Is that something that grew naturally from the farm, from the fruit you had available, or was creating liqueurs always part of the business plan?
Originally, I wanted to start off with whiskey, but it just sort of evolved. And suddenly I ended up with a whole lot of other interests as well. So although we will also be doing the whiskey.
I think we planted a whole lot of apple. Like
we planted apples, peaches,
fruit trees, right? And Matt was like always, oh, whatever we plant, we got to use, we got to eat, whether you like it or not. And so there was all these apples. And I think that sort of was a game. What do we do with all these apples?
Yeah. So that became the apple pie. And then, so at first I started off just trying to make an apple pie moonshine, so, you know, read about them and whatever. And I was still perfecting it, and I made one Christmas, and, you know, everything's chaos. I'm doing a spit roast out on the lawn, and Leisha wants me to move furniture. And, you know, Christmas morning's always hectic before everyone arrives for the lunch. And with all the distractions, I got the measurements wrong. And I thought I'd ruined it. So I just threw it on a barrel and left it.
He wasn't
and then like
very
a month
happy.
Or two later, oh, I'm not
he was
happy.
Not happy.
I blamed her. But
now you can thank me.
Yeah, I thank you now. So yeah, a month or two later, I was like, oh, I'll give it a go. And I was like, oh, actually, this is really nice. It's so that sort of then shaped me into thinking, okay, moonshines are fun, but how about we try and make them into something a bit more socially acceptable and actually lift the standard? Rather than just produce stuff, throw it in a jar and call it moonshine, let's actually be the opposite. You know, rather than a big distillery pretending to slum it down, let's be the little homestead and try and lift it up and compete with the big distilleries.
Mm-hmm.
And turn it into something that is actually, you'd be glad to bring out and pour for your guests, you know? So that's sort of what the apple pie is and what some of the other ones will be too.
Yeah, I must say that apple pie liqueur is absolutely next level. I was absolutely taken back by how delicious that tasted. So yes, well done. And then the other one is you've got Ice Wolf whiskey. Now I was genuinely surprised at how smooth this spirit tasted, despite being an unaged white whiskey. For people who haven't discovered it yet, tell us about the Ice Wolf and why you chose to release the style rather than waiting for it to become an aged whiskey.
Okay, so that just started off, you know, as our very first, you know, the UGASSM simple sugar wash moonshine type stuff, which was rough as guts. Like that was, you know,
and considering I don't drink, remember, and I'm supposed to be his chief taster.
He tells me it's nice or it's not nice.
And I don't like strong. I don't like burn. So for me, I keep saying not.
We had to get it smoother
so that I could drink it.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of.
So we phased out all the sugars, obviously, and we perfected the mashing. It's all wood fired mashed. That's another manic day as well with smoke and fire and all of this. So
yeah,
we've got to get up to speed, and I'm there with the thermometer checking, and then right at the precise time where we want it with our secret number, we then got to quickly get it over into fermenters, and we ferment it with, like, I had to also design the fermenters so that it holds the temperature, because it'll burn if you leave it in there for too long to mash.
Then
sits in the fermenter. And we've gone through a whole process with that, perfecting the grains and things. But I think the biggest key is the way that we make our cuts. So other distilleries will tend to make the cut on the run. And so you're going by smell and taste, the temperature. There's a whole lot of things. And they'll make that decision and then they swap over. And what we've found is that we would make something that's really nice. Well, hey, we really like this.
Yeah.
And then a week later, it's like, this tastes
like,
completely
I can't
different.
Drink this.
It changes.
Yeah.
So what we do is we collect everything up until, you know, in smaller amounts, up until definitely well into the hearts. And then we do the same as it approaches the tail, similar to small home distillers. But then we leave it for a week. And we sit on it for a week before we then even think about making the cuts and where we want to put it. And we go through
a whole day set aside just
that, for that. That's a day just for that, about a week later. No. And we have pipettes. So we go through first, and we don't tell each other what we're thinking.
Yeah.
So we'll go through and we go by smell first, and then we will have little pipettes, and we start at closer to the hearts, and we work our way backwards. Just get a drop at a time from each one, you know, drop it on your lip, and you're testing for the tingle. You'll know the tingle.
Yes.
Smell, things like that. And the moment that we get it, we just sort of take a note, each of us separately. Then we compare our thoughts on it and have a little meeting, and Alicia wins. And we sort of go with that. And that way we eliminated that change in flavor as it settles and does its thing over a week after it's blended. And I know it's not really commercially viable for a lot of people, but because we're so small, we can take the time to do that.
To your point, Susie, is for me, like I said, I like it a smooth drink, but the apple pie, as you said, is incredible. I don't really veer to sort of more the sweet liqueurs. So for me, actually, the Ice Wolf white whiskey is my favorite because that's something I drink actually quite a lot now. And I say a lot, not as much as Matt, but probably. But that's my go-to because it's smooth. It's not very sweet, but you can mix it up. And yeah, it's,
Yeah, it is delicious. I've had a little play with it, so I enjoyed it with a bit of ginger beer the other night.
At
the moment, I'm all about smoking it. You know the little smokers. You played around with those?
Oh no, but that would be that would be amazing.
The homestead Harry Springs homestead video. I make one on there out of Purity, and oh boy, they're fun. You should do that.
Wow. Yeah. Right, now let's move on. You have been on the scene for such a short time, and you've already won medals at the NZ Spirit Awards that was released only the other day. In a year where there weren't actually many awards handed out, that was a pretty special achievement. Tell us what won the awards and what was the moment like when you heard the news?
You heard it first, that you should probably.
So we obviously won for the apple pie liqueur. I think
they got silver.
Silver. And the Ice Wolf, which got bronze. And I think leading up to it, we just sort of, the reason we entered was we discussed it and we thought, well, nobody knows about us. We don't, we don't have a shop people can walk past. And so being, just online sales, I said to Matt, we need the credibility. And whilst your family and friends are great and they've been absolutely very supportive and always giving us really good feedback, I said to him, it will be really great to get sort of, a totally objective, judges, people who are experienced in the industry, and just get some credibility behind our brand. And that's the only reason we entered, whether we were going to win or not. For me personally, it was really about just getting the feedback.
No, I just wanted to win.
Matt wanted to win, okay, being the competitive person that he is. So leading up to it, it was very, we were like every day checking. He's like, oh my gosh, do you think he was dreaming about it? And then the night before, I said to him, you just need to take a chill pill. Remember.
Oh, no. What happened the night before?
The night before, I came home from work and Matt was just sitting on the couch being like,
No, we had a bit of a mix up and we thought we'd completely messed up the actual entry.
It was the week before.
Oh my god, we're pacing up and down the house. We thought the whole thing had fallen through. It was like,
I came home and Matt was just like, I can't believe this. How could you have missed
it? I was just dejected.
But actually,
luckily, they emailed the next day and they're like, no, it's okay. We gave them all these panicked emails through the night, and but it all worked out. But we were entered. It was good.
It was good. And then the day of obviously waiting for that 30th of July to roll by, frantically checking the website. I was at work, Matt's at work, is calling, texting, calling. Eventually, I said to him, stop. You got to stop. Okay, let's give it to 3 o'clock.
Something's wrong.
I said, 3 o'clock, we'll check it again. And then just after 3 rolled by, I just had a feeling and I sent him a text saying, don't stress. I think in the next half hour, it'll all be up online. And literally as I hit send on the text, on my email, it popped up on my phone to say the results. And I was quickly reading it and I called him and I couldn't believe it because, as I said, for me, it was really just about getting the feedback from the judges and just looking at how we can improve our brand. But I think for Matt, with all the hard work, as he's explained,
I spent all that time on it, and then you start visualizing it. I got to win this. We didn't get gold, but I think what happened is actually I was seeing next year. That's what that was.
But totally excited. I mean, it was kind of surreal. I think even when we came on, it was really surreal. And yeah, we're just super happy by the outcome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Well done. Congratulations. Now, winning awards is a wonderful milestone, but I'm guessing this is only the beginning. Where do you want to take Harrier Springs from here? Is there any long-term ambitions, particularly when it comes to your whiskey program, and what listeners might see coming out of the barrels years ahead?
Yeah, so immediately what we're starting on now is I've been playing on some ideas with some cream liqueurs. Well, not plural one. There's one particular that I'm going to make. So I've started work on that, which we'll be entering next year. We also want to, keep pushing forward with just improving the quality of moonshines, to like what we've done with the apple pie, and there's other changes we're going to make with the peach and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
With the whiskey, I've also figured out how to convert a 200-litre barrel into a 50-litre barrel. So what I'm going to be doing is making it possible for people to actually buy their own whiskey in a barrel without that huge cost of the barrel cost. So it would actually be, it'll actually financially work out. If you're doing something in bulk and you're buying bulk, you need to have some cost saving to make it worth your while. And at the moment, I don't think that can really happen realistically. So we can knock that whole price out of it. I'll be custom making these things. I don't really want to show anyone the design just yet till we're ready to launch it. But it'll be it's a really cool display thing. You'd have it on display, and instead of pouring a bottle, you know, it's like a whiskey and pouring it from your bottle, which we can also do, we can provide them bottles. It's really cool. I love it when people come around and they don't know, and I'm going, oh, it's like a whiskey. And I'm ladling it in front of them.
Wow.
And our custom made little copper ladles and things. And they're like, what? There's whiskey in that? That's oh my gosh. They just thought that was just some, you know, design thing, some little knick-knacky thing, you know? So, yeah, that's something really cool that we can do. And people can age it themselves. We can help them with labels if they want to bottle it. But I think it's just really cool. Just drink it out of the barrel as you go and enjoy the flavor changes over the years, you know? Yeah. It's always different. Each month it's a little bit different. So that's something we want to do with our whiskeys. But with what the sort of whiskey we're going to make, we'll be able to make anyone whatever grain bill they want. But personally, I really like peated. I like strong flavors. I'm playing around with dark roast flavors, dark fruity flavors. If you think like, what is it? Black Forest. Is it Black Forest cake?
Black Forest.
I like strong. There's so many light, really nice, summery, refreshing whiskies in New Zealand. That's already out there, and there's some really nice stuff. And why would I compete? Because I don't think whiskey would be our main thing anyway. I've seen from some other distilleries, smaller people like us, where they're saying that, you know, whiskey isn't really their main bread and butter. I think most people are going to, you know, the Poconos or Cadronas and things like that. So I think that'll leave me free to make what I like, and I'll make what I like, what I'm passionate about. If it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, well, if I'm building a man cave on the hill, I'll put some barrels up there and ladle in front of people.
Yeah.
So if we can make money from the other things and just make whiskey that we really like, and hopefully other people will like it too.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stress about what does everyone else like or what's commercial. Like, I've been advised that Kiwis don't really like peated, and I've had some good advice from some of the other distilleries. So I've got a heads up on that. Yeah. But I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. At this stage, I just want to make what I like.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. We do want to make what we like. And I'm not really a whiskey drinker anyway. Well, I'm not a drinker, but not a whiskey drinker. But I do love gin and vodka. That's actually normally my go-to. So at some point, when we've got a bit of time, that's something
vodka,
that I'll be looking at getting into, because that's really what I really enjoy.
That's your passion.
That's my passion, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the gin. I forgot about that. So, we're doing a gin shortly. Which is, I'll be using some botanicals that I've found out hunting in the Kawekas that I really like. So we'll be incorporating some of those. And we've got a vodka coming out soon too, which we'll call it an artesian vodka, which is, you know, from our local water here, spring, which will be out soon too.
Well, that's there's certainly some exciting things coming ahead for Harrier Springs Distillery, definitely by the sounds of it then.
Yeah, gotta try and condense probably.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, finally, just quickly, it's Friday afternoon, the fire's gone out, and it's finally time to put your feet up. What is your, I think we've touched on it already, but tell us, what is your way of drinking your favorite Harrier Springs Distillery spirit?
So mine would be the apple pie, and I'm all about smoking it at the moment. So I'll pour that in a glass with some ice. I smoke it for about a minute with my little homemade smoker, which you can see on my YouTube channel, and swirl it around. That, I mean, how can you not love it with all the smoke coming out? You know, it's like a magic potion. That's me at the moment.
That sounds amazing.
As I said, I love the Ice Wolf Ice Sprite. Oh, it's it's divine. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, I might have to try that one shortly. Matt and Alicia, your story is a wonderful reminder that innovation doesn't always mean latest technology. Sometimes it means looking back, embracing traditional methods, and having the courage to do so and do things differently. Building your own outdoor wood fire distillery, creating spirits with real character, and earning recognition so early in your journey is something you really should be incredibly proud of. I can't wait to see what Harrier Springs Distillery brings out next. Thank you for joining me today on Tales from the Top Shelf.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
It's been really awesome.
It's been lovely.
Even if I was a bit stressed at the beginning.
You're as good as gold. Right now, listeners, if you'd like to experience Harrier Springs Distillery for yourself and explore their award-winning range, including their delicious apple pie liqueur and Ice Wolf Whiskey, head to nzspiritguide.com to learn more. And if you've already been one of those lucky ones to try Harrier Springs Spirit, we'd love to hear what you have to say and leave your rating and review on NZ Spirit Guide to help others discover another outstanding New Zealand distillery. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories. That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was produced at Coast Access Radio with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Coast Access Radio.